Today is Wednesday, September 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain signed agreements at the White House Tuesday formalizing relations.
We're here this afternoon to change the course of history. After decades of division and conflict, we mark the dawn of a new Middle East.
Plus, West African leaders appear to back off their demands in Mali.
It seems that the sanctions will remain in place until the junta hands over power to a transitional leader.
And the city of Louisville, Kentucky reaches an agreement with the family of Breonna Taylor. We'll have these stories and more next. U.S. President Donald Trump hosted a signing ceremony at the White House Tuesday for the normalization of relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, as well as Bahrain.
We're here this afternoon to change the course of history. After decades of division and conflict, we mark the dawn of a new Middle East. Thanks to the great courage of the leaders of these three countries, we take a major stride toward a future in which people of all faiths and backgrounds live together in peace and prosperity.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, UAE Foreign Affairs Minister Abdullah bin Zayed, and Bahrainian Foreign Minister Abdullatif bin Rashid Al Zayani were on hand for the signing of the so-called Abraham Accords on the South Lawn of the White House. The Israel-UAE deal was initially reached on August 13th between Israel and the UAE, with Bahrain announcing last Friday it was also formally recognizing the Jewish state. Netanyahu called the day a pivot of history.
It heralds a new dawn of peace. For thousands of years, the Jewish people have prayed for peace. For decades, the Jewish state has prayed for peace. And this is why today we're filled with such profound gratitude.
UAE Foreign Affairs Minister Abdullah bin Zayed said the accord will lead to a better path for the Middle East.
Every option other than peace would signify destruction, poverty, and human suffering. This new vision, which is beginning to take shape as we meet today for the future of the region full of youthful energy, is not a slogan that we raise for political gain, as everyone looks forward to creating a more stable, prosperous, and secure future.
The agreement was an important first step, says Bahraini Foreign Affairs Minister Abdullatif bin Rashid Al Zayani.
The declaration supporting peace between the Kingdom of Bahrain and the State of Israel is an historic step on the road to genuine and lasting peace, security and prosperity across the region, and for all who live there, regardless of religion, sect, ethnicity, or ideology.
Al Zayani also remarked that with these agreements, an Israeli-Palestinian two-state solution was possible. In Tel Aviv, the city government building was lit up with the words peace in Hebrew, English, and Arabic. Linda Gradstein has that part of the story.
Israelis have warmly welcomed the announcement of peace deals with both the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, and the promise of more states to follow. Yossi Balin is a former Israeli official and longtime negotiator with the Palestinians.
It's a very special day, very important day. One of the ideas of the part of the vision of Zionism was to be part of the Middle East and not to be a lonely state in it. It was very, very difficult to implement it, but gradually it is happening, and today it is another important milestone in the direction of being a part of this region.
Israelis have already begun planning vacations in Dubai, and there is talk of dozens of business deals in the works. For Palestinians, it is close to a nightmare. Although the UAE said it only signed the deal after Israel agreed to drop plans to annex close to a third of the West Bank. For Palestinians, it is close to a nightmare. Although the UAE said it only signed the deal after Israel agreed to drop plans to annex close to a third of the West Bank, Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shteya described the signing ceremony as a black day that will be added to the Palestinian calendar of pain. Longtime negotiator Yossi Balin said the deal could offer new opportunities for a deal with the Palestinians.
Four Arab countries, members of the Arab League, are having peace with Israel, are having normal relations with Israel. So we are expecting these Arab countries to shuttle between Jerusalem and Ramallah, to talk to both sides, to see whether bridges can be built for whatever kind of an agreement. And there are different options for a permanent agreement, for an interim agreement. I believe in the idea of an Israeli-Palestinian confederation, but of course that it is not the only option.
But as longtime Palestinian negotiator Saab Erekat sees it, Israel and the UAE are forming a new military pact.
The Bahrain-American-Israeli agreement to normalize relations is now part of a bigger package in the region. It's not about peace. It's not about relations between countries. We are witnessing an alliance, a military alliance being created in the region. Maybe they want to call it an Arab-Israel-NATO.
Some Israeli analysts see it as Israel and the Gulf states sharing a common enemy, Iran. Gerald Steinberg is a former professor of political science at Bar-Ilan University.
The threat of Iran is something that is the glue that holds us together. It's both common interests, but also the shared threat perceptions of a triumphalist Iran seeking nuclear weapons, and United States largely in terms of military capabilities withdrawing from the region. That's certainly the perception.
For both U.S. President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu, the deal was an achievement. For Netanyahu, it was also a way to avoid the growing numbers of COVID-19 cases, which has reached a new high of 5,000 daily cases. On Friday, Israel goes to a new three-week lockdown to try to contain the pandemic. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
West African mediators failed to persuade leaders of a military coup in Mali to immediately hand over power to a civilian government during talks that were held on Tuesday. I spoke with Katerina Heya in Abidjan via WhatsApp for the latest.
Well, I mean, the junta arrived in Accra today with the pressure from ECOWAS, the regional bloc, as well as international leaders to hand over power to a transitional leader that ECOWAS had requested would be a civilian. What we understand today is that the ECOWAS might have taken a step back and accepted the proposal that the junta put forward over the weekend, which would mean a transitional leader that can either be a civilian or a military officer for a period of 18 months. And that's half of the time that the junta demanded from the beginning. They were talking about 3 years, but it's still far from the 1 year maximum that ECOWAS had requested from the beginning.
What about the sanctions that ECOWAS put in place during the military uprising? Are they going to be remaining in place during this 18-month period?
It seems that the sanctions will remain in place until the junta hands over power to a transitional leader, which is still putting a bit of pressure on them to move forward with the process. It was announced today that there will be another meeting in Bamako within the next few weeks, and at that point, sanctions will be lifted. Will be lifted partially as the junta moves forward with a plan for a transition and the handover to a civilian leader.
You know, over the weekend, there was one of the protest groups that actually was instrumental in organizing rallies and demonstrations that ultimately led to Keita being removed from office. What has been their reaction since they were opposed to the junta's proposal that they put forward over the weekend?
We saw quite strong reactions today, actually, as the talks were ongoing in Accra. Reactions coming from Bamako and the M5 movement, the coalition that has been leading protests over the summer calling for Keita to resign. What they said was that they did not support the junta's proposal for a transition, and particularly the failure to acknowledge their request of having a civilian leader, saying again that the junta has proposed that the leader for a transitional government could be either a civilian or a military officer. And it seems that the main coalition, one of the stakeholders at the moment in Mali's post-coup political climate, will continue to put pressure on the junta to put in place a civilian leader.
There were some protests carried out during the day in support of the military. Did that look like it had any kind of impact on ECOWAS's decision to kind of go with the proposal, at least for now?
I'm sure that ECOWAS is aware of what's going on in Mali. They have already taken a step back from their initial request to put back President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, who was ousted last month. Initially, ECOWAS was asking for him to be reinstated. They have stepped back from this demand. There was indeed protests today. Hundreds of people gathered in the streets of Bamako in support of the junta. And I would imagine that this had partially an impact on ECOWAS decision. We know that the junta has been able to sort of put pressure back on ECOWAS because they actually have popular support from the population.
Katerina Haya reports from the Ivory Coast. Former Nissan Motor executive Greg Kelly went on trial in Tokyo Tuesday, almost 2 years after prosecutors charged the American lawyer with helping his ex-boss, Carlos Ghosn, to hide his earnings. Reuters' Gloria So has that story.
Former Nissan Motor executive Greg Kelly on Tuesday pleaded not guilty to charges he helped his old boss Carlos Ghosn hide his earnings. The American lawyer has been on bail in Japan since being released from jail in 2018 and denies wrongdoing. Ghosn himself fled to Lebanon in December after making a dramatic escape from Japan. Kelly, who was a representative director at Nissan, was charged with helping Ghosn hide $88 million in compensation over 8 years through deferred payments. Ghosn was smuggled out of Japan in a speaker case on a private jet. He had been awaiting trial on charges of underreporting earnings, breach of trust, and misappropriation of company funds, all of which he denies. Kelly's trial, in which Nissan is also a defendant, could take about a year. If found guilty, Kelly could face up to 10 years in prison and a fine of over $90,000. Nissan has cooperated with prosecutors and it declined to comment.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. Scientists on Monday said the vast and ancient ice sheet sitting atop the Greenland has shed a 113 square kilometer chunk of ice last month. The section of the spalt Glacier at the northwest corner of the Arctic island had been cracking for several years before finally breaking free on August 27th, clearing the way for an inland ice loss to the sea. That's according to the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland. Polar advisor for Greenpeace Nordic, Dr. Laura Meller, warned.
The new research is yet another important piece of evidence showing that it's really time we stop hitting the snooze button and wake up to the climate emergency. We need to curb climate emissions right now, immediately, and we need to create a network of ocean sanctuaries covering at least a third of the blue planet if we are to take climate crisis seriously.
Climate scientist Laura Landrum says that the climate in the Arctic is changing dramatically and rapidly, and that it's changing so fast it's transitioning to a new climate, where the new climate can't be predicted by the recent past.
In other words, the Arctic has warmed so significantly that its year-to-year variability is moving outside the bounds of past fluctuations, signaling that it's transitioning to a new climate.
All of the world's governments have fallen short on pledges made a decade ago to protect wildlife, although conservation projects show the destruction of nature can be slowed, That's at least according to a UN report that was published on Tuesday. Reuters' Carolyn Malone takes things from here.
Every government in the world needs to do more to protect wildlife, to save animals from extinction, and to live up to the pledges they made decades ago, according to a UN report published Tuesday. There are programs that protect rare animals, like the snow leopard, which shows that conservation of nature is still possible. But about two-thirds of the world's species, including mammals, birds, amphibians, and reptiles, have been lost over the last 50 years, according to recent data from the World Wildlife Fund. And scientists say a million species remain at risk of extinction. Tuesday's UN report makes recommendations such as rapid phase-out of fossil fuels driving climate change and changes to farming and urban planning. Crucially, it calls on governments to follow through on commitments to stop the decline in wildlife, especially when conservation goals are being undermined by subsidies that support industrial agriculture, fishing, and other businesses that damage ecosystems. Researchers say the destruction of wild spaces is also increasing the risk of disease jumping from animals to humans, such as was highlighted with the origins of the coronavirus being investigated at a wildlife market in Wuhan, China.
Carolyn Malone reports for Reuters. And coming up later,
the UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria says civilians increasingly are being subjected to targeted abuse by all warring parties.
This is VOA News.
AP Showbiz Minute. Chadwick Boseman was buried near his South Carolina hometown 6 days after he died at his home in Los Angeles, according to a death certificate obtained Monday by the Associated Press. The Black Panther star was laid to rest September 3rd at Welfare Baptist Church Cemetery in Belton, South Carolina, about 11 miles from Bozeman's hometown of Anderson. After opening a free grocery store earlier this year, country music star Brad Paisley and his wife are expanding their efforts to fight hunger in America. Paisley and his wife, actress Kimberly Williams Paisley, have pledged to donate 1 million nutritional meals this month. The initiative's billed as the Million Meal Donation Tour, which kicked off in Detroit last week. A Macy's Thanksgiving parade reimagined for the coronavirus pandemic will feature floats, performers, and giant balloons along a one-block stretch of 34th Street in front of the retailer's flagship Manhattan store, Macy's officials announced Monday. This year's performers will be announced later. This is Lizzie Knight with AP Showbiz Minute.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Europe has called on China to take down trade barriers and rebalance the economic relationship following a virtual summit held on Monday between the EU leaders and Chinese President Xi Jinping. EU officials also raised human rights issues, including the crackdown on protests in Hong Kong, but Beijing is rejecting any interference in its affairs. Henry Ridgewell reports.
The glitz of an international summit downgraded to a virtual conference. EU and Chinese leaders had planned to hold face-to-face talks in Germany, but the resurgent coronavirus pandemic meant that was changed to a video link between two top EU officials, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and the Chinese President Xi Jinping. Speaking after the meeting, European leaders reiterated demands for China to open up its markets.
Europe needs to be a player, not a playing field. Today's meeting represents another step forward in forging a more balanced relationship with China.
We expect that the market access barriers in China will be removed.
Europe sees its current trade relationship with China as deeply unfair, but is not seeking a trade war, says analyst Steve Tsang.
I think COVID-19 has changed a lot of things in terms of relationship with China. Many of these countries found China less than an entirely reliable trading partner or supplier of essential goods like medical supplies. So some of that will change, but they really don't want to have an economic decoupling with China.
But the trade talks were overshadowed by growing criticism of China's human rights record. The EU has called on Beijing to end its clampdown on pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. And Europe has voiced growing alarm over China's treatment of the Muslim Uyghur population in Xinjiang province, where human rights groups say millions of people are being detained. While China denies the accusations, German Chancellor Angela Merkel says Europe will continue to raise the issue.
The human rights dialogue will continue. Chinese President Xi Jinping offered this, so there are already points of contact for further joint action. But that does not mean that there is agreement on these issues.
Chinese state media reports that President Xi Jinping has rejected any interference in Chinese affairs, particularly on human rights. The relationship is strained, says Tsang.
Governments generally and the EU as a whole also take a more robust stance, reflecting the shift in public opinion towards China.
With the EU as China's top trading partner, analysts say Beijing wants to avoid further disputes amid its trade war with the United States. For its part, Brussels says it will continue to bring up security and human rights concerns, even as it seeks more trade. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The U.S. Justice Department is poised to announce charges and arrests related to a computer intrusion campaign tied to the Chinese government, according to a department statement on Tuesday. Deputy Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen, FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch, and other officials will take part in a news conference at 1500 UTC on Wednesday to make the announcement. No details were given. The city of Louisville, Kentucky, will pay $12 million to the family of Breonna Taylor and reform police practices in the city. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Taylor was shot and killed by police, setting off protest in Louisville. Greg Fisher is the mayor.
For those who knew her, Breonna's death is personal, the pain is visceral, and the loss ever more devastating.
Breonna Taylor's mother, Tamika Palmer, says the settlement is significant, but it's only the beginning.
We must not lose focus on what the real drive is. And with that being said, it's time to move forward with the criminal charges because she deserves that and much more.
The settlement has nothing to do with the criminal investigation. One of the three officers who fired shots at Breonna Taylor has been fired. I'm Ed Donahue.
Germany has agreed to take more than 1,500 migrants stranded on Greek islands after a fire destroyed an overcrowded camp, according to Chancellor Angela Merkel's spokesman on Tuesday. That's in a gesture of solidarity with its fellow European Union member states. More than 12,000 people, mostly asylum seekers from Afghanistan, Africa, and Syria, were left without shelter, proper sanitation, or access to food after a fire destroyed the Moria migrant camp on the island of Lesbos last week. Greek police have detained six migrants following the blaze. Greek authorities believe the fire was deliberately lit by camp occupants after quarantine measures were imposed following the discovery of coronavirus cases on the site. Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny shared a photograph from a Berlin hospital bed on Tuesday, sitting up and surrounded by his family, and said he could now breathe independently after being poisoned in Siberia last month. The photo, the strongest evidence yet of Navalny's advancing recovery after emerging from a coma last week, was swiftly followed by confirmation from his press spokeswoman that he planned to return to Russia. Outgoing Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and his cabinet are set to resign Wednesday, clearing the way for his successor to take over after parliamentary confirmations later in the day. Abe, Japan's longest-serving prime minister, announced last month that he was stepping down because of health problems. Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga, long seen as Abe's right-hand man, was chosen Monday as the new head of the governing Liberal Democratic Party, virtually guaranteeing his election as prime minister in a parliamentary vote Wednesday because of the party's majority. Suga has said that he will pursue Abe's unfinished policies. The UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria says civilians increasingly are being subjected to targeted abuse by all warring parties. The commission's report, which documents violations during the first half of this year, will be submitted to the UN Human Rights Council later this month. Lisa Schlein has more.
Large-scale hostilities in the nearly decade-long conflict have declined since the ceasefire took effect March 5th. While fighting among the armed groups is dwindling, their aggression involving the civilian population is on the rise. In its 25-page report, the three-member Commission of Inquiry documents dozens of different types of violations in scores of incidents affecting tens of thousands of victims. The report says violations continue to be employed, including arbitrary detention, enforced disappearances, torture, and deaths in custody. At the same time, Chair of the Commission, Paulo Pinheiro, says newer forms of violations, including targeted killings, looting, and appropriation of property, are increasing in numbers and carry sectarian undertones.
Across government-held areas, we documented 45 cases of enforced disappearance, 13 cases of torture, and 19 deaths in detention. Continuing to repress people by placing them in incommunicado detention and in abhorrent conditions and torture then amounts to crimes against humanity.
While Syrian government forces are responsible for most violations against civilians, the report notes none of the armed groups has clean hands. For example, it says the Syrian National Army, a Turkish-backed rebel group in the northern city of Afrin, may have committed the war crimes of hostage-taking, torture, and rape. UN Commissioner Hani Megali tells VOA there has been an alarming increase in rapes, sexual and gender-based violence against women and girls.
In the past, we were reporting on sexual and gender-based violence being used to intimidate, to get confessions, to force people to hand themselves in, etc. We're worried now we're seeing this is being used to instill fear, and it's being used against particular groups.
The UN investigators say the report covers just a fraction of the violations suffered by Syrian civilians. They say the report shows the same patterns of violence and human rights abuse, which prompted the protests in 2011 and sparked the conflict, now are being practiced by all the armed groups. The three-member commission adds all those who have blood on their hands must be held accountable for their crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thanks to environmental laws, white sharks are returning to the coastal waters of New England, located in the United States Northeast. But that area also attracts hordes of people who swim and windsurf. A new app keeps it safe by alerting people on shore to the presence of giant predators. And Matt Dibble has that story.
Each summer, the population of Cape Cod, Massachusetts swells as thousands of visitors head to its beaches. Beneath the waves, there's a growing population of other seasonal visitors, white sharks. Once killed for sport, white sharks were rare here until the species became protected, along with their major food source, gray seals. Cynthia Wigren leads the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy, a group she co-founded to share research with the public about sharks.
Having sharks off of our coast really represents the fact that we have a healthy ecosystem, but clearly creates some challenges.
With the goal of fostering a peaceful coexistence between humans and sharks, the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy launched Sharktivity, a phone app that tracks shark sightings by staff, citizens, and real-time sensors.
There are white sharks that have acoustic tags on them, and when they swim within a couple hundred yards of a receiver, that's equipment in the water to detect them, then that information will also go up on the app.
In the summer months, there are sightings nearly every day. When a shark triggers a sensor near a popular area, an alert appears on the app and beach managers may decide to close that beach. After a recent fatal shark attack, people are learning ways to stay safer in the water. Windsurfer Ed Runcie pays close attention to the alerts he receives.
It's their ocean. We're just visiting, and you have to respect the locals. There's no one thing that can keep you safe. Every little bit of information helps.
Sharktivity currently focuses on sharks off the east coast of North America, but its users range across the U.S. and around the world, a sign of widespread fascination with the toothy giants. For VOA News, Matt Dibble.
And you've been listening to International Edition. on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.